The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
That was one heck of a chat past hour with John Gusty of the RedPillRevolution.com. Check it out. Check out the book, and hopefully he joins us once again. Very much enjoyed that conversation. And what do we got going on? A lot of geopolitical news. Was reported that Saudi Crown Prince threatened major economic pain on the U.S. amid oil feud after Biden vowed to impose consequences on Saudi Arabia for slashing oil production last year. MBS. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman privately threatened to sever ties and retaliate economically, according to classified U.S. intelligence documents. So that's a big deal. That's the basis for our petrodollar, which was, I believe, first solidified, I think, at the end of World War II, 1945, with FDR and King, was it Faisal at the time, one of the Navy carriers whose name I forget. But then, later after 1971, when the gold was delinked and basically all dollars being sold or all oil then being sold in dollars, but that time might be coming to an end. And look at the attitude of the Saudis now and the rest of the world. U.S. Army reinforces presence in occupied Syrian oil fields. U.S. Army commanders recently stated that the Pentagon has no plans to exit Syria anytime soon. They are doubling down, and one expert says that U.S. has now direct influence over the vast majority of Syria's most productive oil fields, and that the territorial gains of the SDF are Syrian national treasures that, when added up, amount to brute geopolitical power for the U.S. So the U.S. is doubling down for now in Syria, and the arrival of Washington's new troops comes at a time of increased tensions with the Russian army. What could go wrong? As if we needed more, U.S. conducts bomber exercise with Israel, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia to intimidate Iran. The drills, which also included two unnamed West Asian countries, come despite a recent rapprochement deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. I'm guessing these were nuclear-capable, USB-1 bombers, flew over West Asia and dropped munitions on simulated targets. Display of force directed at Iran. And on top of that, simultaneously, it's being reported at the Jerusalem Post that titled "On the Brink, Unpacking Israel's Unilateral Strike Threat Against Iran." Israel has reaffirmed its capability for a preemptive strike on Iran, which would likely lead to a multi-front war with serious ramifications for the region. Let's have a big party. Everyone just gets into a multi-front war. Israel gets into a multi-front war with its neighbors. The U.S. gets into a multi-front war with Russia and China. It's big. Big party, and we would all be in it. We would all be invited to a party that we never wanted to be invited to in the first place. And so Netanyahu has repeated his threats against Iran this weekend during a cabinet meeting held as part of a national war drill. But, I really liked my past guest Francis Boyle's analysis that we're dealing with unlimited imperialism. So this Western global empire, the biggest the world has ever seen, will not stop until someone stops it. It will seek one world government until it blows up the world, until it achieves it or blows up the world, or someone puts an end to it. And on top of that, it was also published today, Iran BRICS membership to soon be materialized. Iranian President Raisi underlines that his country's membership in the BRICS alliance will soon be realized. I think he's headed to Latin America, if I'm not mistaken, for a tour. And he says membership in the BRICS alliance will soon come to fruition. That's probably one of the reasons that we got these war games against Iran. Right now, we're crossing the Rubicon. And Putin reveals new details on positioning tactical nukes in Belarus. Because why not? What does he say? That tactical nukes will be deployed in Belarus after hosting facilities are ready on July 7th and 8th. So that's like in a month's time. He says everything's according to plan. is everything is stable. And yeah, there's that. China continues to accumulate gold. I saw Peter St. Onge, fast guest of mine, comment on this story from the Gold Telegraph, which I shared yesterday. They got 2,000 plus tons of gold, and technically they have enough to introduce a gold-backed currency. That'd be enough, according to Peter St. Onge. And so, yeah, very interesting times. That would be a nuclear economic option for China and the BRICS countries to unleash a gold-backed currency unit. The Intercept, surprisingly, is talking about de-dollarization. And I guess they did an interview with Frank Giustra, Jeremy Scahill. He's a mining financier, Frank Giustra, who's been going on about this. And just for fun, here's a story from, you know, my state of Jalisco here in Mexico under Governor Enrique Adolfo Alfaro, as I call him. I added the Adolfo as an Adolf Hitler, because this guy's an insane globalist that wanted to like lock us down. He put checkpoints. He said he proposed ideas of changing the state's constitution to make illegal mandated vaccines legal, and to demand if you try to leave the state, not even the country, but the state, or to come into the state, you'd have to show vaccine certificates. Total Nazi Enrique Adolfo Alfaro. Anyways, under his regime, disappearances here in my state have increased 35%. And Jalisco, the known as the free and sovereign state, has the distinction of the state with the most disappearances in Mexico since 2019. So if I disappear one day, it won't be a mystery why. All right. Help us out on the socials, big tech, alt tech. It's a big help for TNT Radio to get the word out, because, you know, everything is shadow banned and censored. And so, you know, that little bit of effort is always helping. So follow TNT Radio over at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, Getter, Rumble, Odyssey, YouTube, anywhere else you can find us. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on TNT Radio.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
According to former NATO Secretary General Anders Rasmussen, individual NATO members could send troops to Ukraine if the alliance fails to provide Kiev with security guarantees. At an upcoming summit in Vilnius, here with the story, joining me again is TNT Radio news producer Adam Ruckus Clark.
Thanks, Sir Rory. So, what did Rasmussen tell the British newspaper The Guardian on June 7th? Well, he told them this, quote, "If NATO cannot agree on a clear path forward for Ukraine, there is a clear possibility that some countries individually might take action," end quote. You heard that right. Poland in particular, he said, quote, "is very engaged in providing concrete assistance to Ukraine." He added, quote, "I wouldn't exclude the possibility that Poland would engage even stronger in this context and be followed by the Baltic states, maybe including the possibility of troops on the ground," end quote. Poland, which shares a 330-mile-long border with Ukraine, is among Kyiv's most ardent supporters, other than money-wise, of course, that would be us. Last year, Warsaw provided Kyiv with 250 combat tanks. Wow. Earlier this year, it was the first country to pledge German-made Leopard tanks to Ukraine. In March, Poland became the first NATO member to contribute fighter jets in the form of four MiG-29s to Ukraine. It appears to me like they've been doing a lot of the firsts lately. All right, so the following month, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited Warsaw, where Polish President Duda reiterated his country's support for Kyiv. I know how to say his name. Andrzej, there we go. Andrzej Duda, I believe. The Baltic states mentioned by Rasmussen, NATO members Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are also all staunch supporters of Ukraine. Rasmussen, a former Danish prime minister, served as NATO Secretary General from 2009 to 2014. a pivotal year when we're speaking of things concerning Ukraine. He currently acts as an advisor to Zelensky on issues pertaining to Kyiv's long-term security. If carried out, Rasmussen's suggestion would be a turning point in terms of steadily escalating Western support for Ukraine. You ain't kidding. Since Russia launched its invasion early last year, the West, with the United States at the lead, has provided Kyiv with increasingly sophisticated arms and equipment. This has included HIMARS rocket launchers, advanced combat drones, Western-made battle tanks, and U.S. Patriot air defense systems. Last month, several allies of Kyiv signaled their readiness to train Ukrainian pilots to fly F-16s. But until now, Western capitals, fearing wider conflict with Russia, have shied away from the notion of putting boots on the ground in Ukraine. Apparently not anymore. On February 24th of last year, the day Moscow initially launched its invasion, Jens Stoltenberg, NATO's current Secretary General, said the alliance had no plans to deploy troops. He told reporters, quote, "There are no NATO combat troops, no NATO troops at all inside Ukraine. We have made it clear that we don't have any plans and intention of deploying NATO troops in Ukraine," end quote. And yet here we are with this other guy. All right, so there is a summit coming up at a So at a June 1st meeting of European leaders in Moldova, Zelensky reiterated his call for Ukraine's accession to NATO. And I think he was denied. Barring full membership, he urged the alliance to grant Kyiv security guarantees as the conflict entered its 15th month. That's been going on for a while. Zelensky also voiced hope that his country would be invited to join the alliance at an upcoming NATO summit in Vilnius, Lithuania's capital. I was right. It is an upcoming summit. This is slated for July 11th and 12th. And according to Stoltenberg, the sought-for security guarantees will be on the agenda of the Vilnius summit. But I've been seeing a lot of headlines and news all over the place saying that Ukraine doesn't stand a chance of joining NATO. But I'm very concerned with this suggestion that, you know what, it doesn't matter. I know you're a NATO member country and all, but go ahead and put some boots on the ground. I'm sure that won't be a problem. Hervory, don't you think that would be a pretty big problem?
Not for the elites, because they want World War III. I mean, it seems like both sides, but especially the West, are just, I mean, they're doing everything they can to prolong this war, little by little, troops here, meetings discussing the inclusion of Ukraine into NATO there, different military equipment there, false flags like the dam, and then they're talking about going into Crimea now. And I think the East, they have a more mature understanding, given the history that they've gone through, like Putin and Russia and everyone else, that this can go, you know, at the snap of a fingers, we can go to nuclear war, not necessarily nuclear Armageddon. I think we could bounce back eventually from nuclear war, but it's not something you'd want to bounce. Let's not go there. That would be incredibly damaging, but Putin understands he doesn't want to play their game, you know, when they run these false flags. And so he's just kind of biding his time. I think he's hoping that economically things deteriorate in the West, which forces them to stop this nonsense. I don't know if you mentioned it before, but Pentagon readies new $2 billion military aid package for Ukraine. And so it's like the money will never runs out at the Federal Reserve. I don't get, it's just they have, it's a bottomless pit in terms of, you know, how much money they can print. And as well, Putin has just commented on the Ukrainian counter offensive. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer, Ruckus.
It's not like we're ever going to spend billions of dollars like fixing homelessness, drug addiction, and pornography and all this other stuff, right? But no, war. Yeah, this is crazy. This is very dangerous, and it's stupid. They're literally saying we're damned if you do, damned if you don't, because as Dmitry Medvedev, deputy head of Russia's Security Council, responding to Rasmussen's remarks. So this is what he had to say on a post on Telegram yesterday. Rasmussen, he wrote, quote, said that if Ukraine doesn't receive an invitation to join NATO in Vilnius, countries of the alliance would be able to send troops there on their own. And then he asked, quote, have the people of these countries been asked? Who among them wants war with Russia? Do they really want hypersonic strikes on Europe? End quote. So the threats are out from Russia already, Arvori.
And also interesting point today, I'm hearing a lot of chatter on the alt media feeds. Boris Johnson has stepped down, and I don't know why people keep saying, is Boris Johnson going to be the new NATO chief? That would be really hilarious. I mean, Bojo the Clown, as I call him, him as the head of NATO. Imagine him pressing the red, the shiny red nuclear button. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he doesn't. Who knows? Maybe, you know, a lot of this is, you know, we got the British Empire behind the scenes running a lot of this. So maybe it would make sense to have Bojo start World War III. So great way to end the weekend, Ruckus, on that note, World War III. Have a great weekend. We got Jose Nino up next. Feel free to call, dial in and chat with us about anything. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Katie Hopkins is talking about.
The UK's most, I'm reading, senior climate advisor, imagine having that title, has strongly endorsed Labour's vow to halt new oil and gas exploration in the North Sea. So John Gummer, who is Lord Devon, and he chairs the Statutory Committee on Climate Change. God, it just sounds more and more communist the more you read this stuff, doesn't it? He says, I welcome the policy. I'm absolutely in favour of it. And it's the right thing to do. You notice how these people, just because they're called Lord, get to dictate what is the right thing to do? You know, who is the arbiter of right and wrong? It certainly isn't a politician any day of the week, is it? But essentially, he is promoting, pushing, paid, undoubtedly, to shut down oil and gas, so that no one can have a nationalized oil and gas supply, because we know that energy independence is the massive first step towards national independence. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why Trump had to be crucified, because for the first time in generations, America was oil and gas independent, which is why the first thing Biden did was shut down the pipeline and all of the jobs and all of the families that relied on it.
Katie Hopkins on TNT Radio.
Have you ever felt like time was moving too fast? Do you need a break from the hustle and bustle of your daily routine? Then come and experience Sam Sam Yao Noi, where time slows down and magic comes to life on the stunning Yao Noi Island in southern Thailand. Our private villas and public spaces are quiet, spacious, and very inspirational. Inside and outside magic spaces, you'll find exceptional facilities and a full contemporary art collection to inspire your senses. Our dedicated Sam Sam family is here to provide bespoke services to make your stay unforgettable. Let nature and our Sam Sam family team take over, and you'll get the utmost recalibration of your mental balance. Discover the enchantment that awaits you at Sam Sam Yao Noi. Book your stay today at Sam Sam Yao Noi and experience our magic places. Magic spaces for yourself.
Book your stay in Thailand now and visit samsam-spaces.com.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut up! We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global plandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out. Call the open line anytime. In the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, we're finishing off the weekend, at least for me, the week, with Jose Nino, purveyor of contrarian political insights, freelance writer, political analyst based in Texas. You can find him over at his Substack, josbcf.substack.com. He writes for Big League Politics, Geopolitics, and Empire. Yeah, how's it going, Jose?
Things are going quite well, Herboye.
It was great meeting you last week in the flesh.
Yeah, let's reminisce a bit. I mean, that was, for me in total, an amazing experience, just going to Texas for the first time, albeit briefly, the event, the conference, hanging out with you. We're sitting at a table, Scott Horton to my left, you to my right with Daniel McAdams. John Liesk, who he's been a guest of mine a number of times. He came up to me during the conference. I had no idea he was there. He's based in Houston. Chris Baker, who I didn't know him, but I've seen his face online. He came up to me. He's going to be a guest on TNT next week. He's also got a podcast show where he's interviewed some of the same people. And then, you know, meeting Ron Paul and then hanging out at Dan McAdams' house. I know you couldn't make it. That was also just an amazing weekend. What's sort of your takeaway?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. It was great to meet a lot of high-value people at this event, and the speakers were absolutely on point. They dropped a major truth there. And McAdams has run a really tight outfit with the RPI conferences. Every event, in my opinion, is solid in terms of the content, and also the speakers are incredibly engaging, and they always have like a very polemical spin to the heated issues of our day.
Yeah, I mean, all the content was great. It was tight. It was concise. People can watch the talks online. They Skyped in Peter Van Buren, former, I think, diplomat, who really went into detail on the Durham report and just how, you know, how the FBI is basically the Stasi today. I also met, Monica Perez, who's a guest often on my show. I met her producer as well. This really demonstrates the value of getting off the metaverse, getting off the computer, yes, and going to, yes, physical events. And so I had Scott Armstrong recently on, and I think I'm going to go in August to Austin, where you are, at the American Liberty Awards, and then hopefully to Washington to the next Ron Paul conference, and then any other events that I find interesting in my neighborhood. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about that event. And I noticed you didn't get a new photo with Ron Paul. Is it you just didn't want to bug him or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've already have like enough photos of Ron Paul, but at that point I was kind of already like prepping to like go back to Austin. So I was just like in that mode.
Yeah, I think we need, he's still sharp at age 88. Very well read, well spoken. And we really need new, you know, young Ron Pauls, people who are well read, diplomatic, in my opinion, you know, not uncouth or whatever. I think just proper sorts of folks, brave, fighting against the system, whether from within the system or without. I don't know. At the moment, I can't think of too many, but of course, you know, we've got some younger-ish politicians. I was listening to Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who I'm a huge fan of, recently fighting tyranny, and another, I think, congressman senator from North Dakota. But can you think of any, you know, potential candidates for sorts of new Ron Pauls?
The closest, I think, in Congress, in my opinion, is Thomas Massie. That's like, and he's not old either. He's quite young. I don't think he's even 50, if I'm not mistaken. I have to double check. He's like one of, in my opinion, is Dr. Paul's successor in Congress. Okay, yeah, he's 52. So yeah, he's not like super young, but he's not like that old. But yeah, there really are some people I liked. Yeah, speaking of North Dakota, I forgot the guy's name. There's a really good state representative there that is actually like very libertarian, and he was one of like the instrumental people for the passage of constitutional carry there. His name like slips my mind.
The congressman that I was talking about from North Dakota was Congressman Kelly Armstrong, and so he was speaking against the COVID tyranny. So, anyways,
yeah, Yeah, this one's a different one. I forget his name. I think it's like something Becker. I'm gotta check to make sure. But yeah, he's actually like pretty hardcore libertarian though.
And yeah, I mean, Thomas Massey is great. He's, you know, he's bogged down, but he's a scientist. He's a farmer, you know, MIT, I think, graduate. He's a politician just fighting completely against tyranny. And so I think we need to help him. He needs to get out there, write more books, just build up this movement and momentum, you know, join forces like with folks out there in Missouri. Josh Hawley, I think, is also a very good force. And so get just, you know, Rand Paul, of course, just we need to get people in this vein, building momentum from all over the place, like a decentralized sort of war against this tyrannical state. And hopefully, you know, we can push back some of this tyranny, buy us some more time. And Jose, we're going to jump to our headlines with James.
This news just in.
TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Dozens of firefighters from France have arrived in Quebec, where they'll join the fight against the more than 140 fires burning across the province. The French firefighters are expected to head today to Roberval for a briefing before they begin fighting fires. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman privately threatened to harm the American economy after President Joe Biden warned Saudi Arabia of consequences for agreeing on an oil production cut with Russia.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
We continue our conversation with Jose Nino. Find him on Twitter at JoseALNino, and maybe you can discuss some of the stuff you've been writing about on your Jose Nino Unfiltered Substack. One piece is the silence is violence crowd, which you say is violent, pretty violent. It seems what's you talking about college campuses. You talk about the case of Professor Shelin Rodriguez, who verbally attacked and vandalized the pro-life student display, which highlights the extent to which dissenting opinions are silenced. And I guess it's, you know, it's always it seems to be getting worse in academia. What's going on here?
Oh yeah, I think this is just standard fare at this point. Universities in the U.S. are leftist think tanks by and large, and the only type of like dissent they allow is whether you're like a neoliberal cultural Marxist or just like technocratic globalist. And that's like the only type of like debates they really have, or it's like a generic progressive. And anything that's like to the right of that is automatically discarded, is if not like outright pummeled, quite literally. And these professors, man, like in this case, like she was just acting like a total thug and just cussing out these activists and then like vandalizing this stuff. Like this was like a like behavior I would expect from some like unhinged Black Lives Matter activist, not supposedly like a professor that represents like a like institution of higher learning. But hey, we live in clown world USA, so what can you expect?
Yeah, you at the end cite the work of Jonathan Turley, who is fantastic as well. And yeah, it's just, it's always getting, you know, I taught undergrad in international relations here in Mexico, and I could just gauge by, you know, take any topic, by far the majority of students were left-wing liberal globalists. For me now, I mean, if you think about it, most, you know, globalism, the ideology is mostly left liberal, because I find that largely more so conservatives are against this globalist ideology, because it's, you know, one world government. Conservatives tend to be at least nominally Christians who understand the prophecy of world government. And, you know, I taught on climate change, and 90%+ believe the narrative. You're crazy if you question Al Gore or, you know, 9/11 false flag operations, deep politics. They were open to that. But for me, the biggest thing was they don't really care. This is the craziest thing. Like, we're discussing how the government, here's this, maybe if you have a thought on this, but here are students who sign up to study the major they want to major in that they're supposed to be passionate about. You know, I studied history and international relations. I was insanely passionate about it. And then they don't care. It's like I Skype in like Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, CIA officer Ray McGovern, Lord Christopher Monckton. They don't care at all. They're all just like whatever. They're on their phones and they're not questioning this stuff. And, I find like this apathy is even worse. You know, the apathy, nobody cares. I don't know. What's your take, Jose?
It's actually kind of interesting as well how universities now, because of like the mass access to them, has like cheapened the not only like the educational experience, but the type of people that are attending to. It's like very debased. Like people don't really want to learn, because back then, like universities used to attract some of the most like inquisitive and talented minds, but now people just go there to party or do like really like tacky forms of like networking that doesn't even build like high value networks and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've ran away from university. If I don't need to, I don't want to go back there. I find, you know, going attending a Ron Paul Institute conference or the Greater Reset down here in Mexico or whatever, that sort of stuff is much more valuable. And again, more people are just listening to podcasts and TNT radio and stuff than, the reach there is much greater than academia, which is tightly controlled, whether it's the courses you teach or publications, so on and so forth. And you also written about Chick-fil-A, and it's really sad to see Chick-fil-A. You're supposed to have a belief, you're supposed to stick to it no matter what, stick to your guns, and they're capitulating. It's unbelievable. You talk about how they've now promoted someone, I think, there to DEI. Of course, that's the globalist DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. You know, that goes together with ESG scores and then DEI. That's that globalist tool now to control the world. You know, individuals will have social credit scores and then companies will have the DEI or ESG score. What's happening with Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, they've just embraced these new DEI standards, and the fact is that I would argue that even ostensibly conservative institutions, from the church to conservative businesses like Chick-fil-A, they are being subjected to much bigger macro forces, such as wokeism, that is like just consuming these institutions and subverting them. And in many respects, some of this stuff at times actually happens at bottom up too, because a lot of these younger workers and these up and comers that are moving up the corporate ladder, they're raised in a very different milieu from like their more conservative predecessors and the founders of these companies. So it stands to reason that left unchecked, wokeism will even like eat away at ostensibly conservative institutions.
Yeah. And there was a great clip that I mentioned last week that came out explaining more of, you know, why this is a globalist communist assault, where a lot of these, some of these companies, I think some do have a choice, like Chick-fil-A. They certainly do have a choice not to go along with this. Others, maybe their financials aren't as good, but they depend on BlackRock and Vanguard and all these sort of institutions and banks, and that if they don't comply with DEI or ESG, there's no capital, they collapse. And so they're going along, but in any case, they're also collapsing. It's like, what's that saying? Between a rock and a hard place, or damned if I do, damned if I don't, something like that, where even by implementing this, they're losing their customer base. They're having to fire people, working class, middle class people. But that's also the goal, because they eventually, they want to erase the American identity, which is tied to Chick-fil-A and some of these other companies that you mentioned, Target and Walmarts and North Face, and they're all going to become LGBTized. And they're slowly erasing that traditional Americana identity. And I wish some of these companies would put up more of a fight like Chick-fil-A. It's just, it's nuts, Jose.
Yes. The big picture here is that now there is a regime change of sorts happening in the U.S. where the toppling of these companies like traditional values and the replacement with these new idols is a change of the guard from like a traditional America to a more multicultural woke America, where the so-called plight of grievance groups, whether they're racial or like sexual groups, is put on a pedestal at the expense of like the historic American nation. This is a trend that I believe is going to continue to accelerate until like there's like actually like a proper nationalist reaction to it.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this news. I mean, for me, this was shocking. They replaced, I guess, at the Rockefeller Center, the UN, 193 countries of the UN flags. Who gave them the right to change my three countries' flags of USA, Croatia, and Mexico? All 193, as Jim Jatras puts it, rainbow fascism flags, LGBT flags. What is this again? I mean, we're way past the point of, you know, the sexual preference of what people do in their own home versus now we're replacing your flag with, you know, the symbol of sexual preferences. What does that have to, you know, you guys do whatever you want in your own private homes. Why are you then replacing my country's flag with what you do in your homes? I mean, this is, and that's like the symbol of this. This is like the new, the empire, right? When you use the Star Wars, what do you call it? I haven't watched those films in a long time, but you know, the Dark Empire. This is their now ideology and symbol, and that's it. And let's talk some geopolitics. There's a lot of stuff going on. You've been writing about some issues: China, Russia, and Iran forging new oil agreements to create new energy market. And then on top of that, we've got these a whole bunch of NATO exercises that are taking place above Sweden, in the Arctic, and then elsewhere. And then you've got U.S. conducting bomber exercise with Israel, Jordan, Saudi Arabia to intimidate Iran. At the same time that Iran is, I think they're going to take a tour through Latin America, Raisi, the president. And then he just came out today saying that, you know, the fruits of the BRICS membership are about to materialize. So it's like, well, then it's no wonder at this point in time that, you know, they're running these bomber exercises against Iran to intimidate Iran, just as its membership in BRICS is coming online. And then there's just a lot of, you know, the Cradle, the publication, the Cradle is on fire today. I just retweeted a whole bunch of their articles. There is another one where the U.S. Army is reinforcing its presence in Syria. What are just your thoughts as to what's, you know, this new energy deal between these countries as well as, you know, other such issues?
Yeah, I just think that this is a further trend of the Eurasian powers starting to build economic links among their own, and not rely so much on the West. Now they're slowly doing this and they're starting to cooperate more on a host of issues. And there's countries as well that have had previous tensions that are putting aside those historical grievances and working towards building like a better future. Because like, let's face it, with the way the West is going, like it's not the strong horse, and it's definitely not a political block that any rational nation should really cast its lot with.
Yeah, your article also mentions Russian Deputy Prime Minister and co-chair of the Permanent Russian-Iranian Commission on Trade and Economic Cooperation, highlighting that the two countries are working on facilitating banking activities and using their national currencies in bilateral transactions, and that additional progress was also realized in the North-South Transport corridor, NSTC. I've seen a few analysts mention this as well. I think this is important, where they've got multiple agreements hammered out in the air, transport, maritime, rail, and road sectors, and that Russia has an interest in constructing the corridor all the way to India and beyond. So, yeah, there's just a lot of movement going on. And I think maybe at this moment, people are like, oh, it's not such a big deal. Like, it's on paper, we're seeing this stuff. But I think soon in the coming years, when this stuff goes online and trade begins to pass through these corridors and routes, we're going to see big sea changes. So it's not quite evident yet, but give it a few years and we're going to be seeing, I think, things we haven't seen before. All right, Jose, we're going to jump to our break. You can find Jose's stuff. Find him on Twitter at Jose A.L. Nino, on Substack at josbcf.substack.com, and feel free to call in and chat with us. We'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Last Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley participated in another CNN town hall event. According to Mediaite, Donald Trump's town hall with Caitlin Collins last month brought in about 3.3 million total viewers and 780,000 demo viewers between the ages of 25 and 54. That's more than five times the average primetime audience that CNN had during the month of May. Haley's event, moderated by Jake Tapper, brought in 562,000 total viewers and 136,000 viewers in the demo, an 83% drop in viewership in total audience compared to Trump. Fox News doubled the Haley town hall. It's kind of sad, really, yet most telling. Nikki Haley, a former governor and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, she's vibrant, attractive, and polished, in addition to having a lot of good common sense ideas, and yet Trump's audience blew hers away. By the way, believe it or not, according to Yahoo News, CNN's 2020 town hall with Joe Biden remains the network's most watched single candidate town hall with nearly 3.5 million total viewers. Go figure. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Imagine people driving through your workplace. Full on, huh? Well, that's what road workers live with every day. So don't make it dangerous by driving carelessly through roadworks. Look up, slow down, take care.
They killed the coffee machine.
No.
Because you wouldn't like it. Authorized by the state government, Perth.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's our last segment with Jose Nino. Find his Substack. He does great podcasts with high-level folks, many of which I've interviewed. And maybe I thought, you know, well, let's continue on that line. You wrote about Xi Jinping preparing for conflict with the West. I think we will. I think eventually we are going to see major military conflict, regardless of some of these globalist inroads that we have seen into China and Russia and whatnot. It's not 100%. And so I think at one point, these globalists are going to want too much control, and that the nationalist instinct in places like China will reawaken. And, you know, they had the century of humiliation. They haven't forgotten that. And I think we will see future conflict. I can't tell you when, but I think probably closer to 2030. What do you make of, and you know, I think the elites of the world, they like to play Rambo and Commando, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They like to play the board game Risk, but for real with the world, like the real thing. And so they like seeing bombs go off and bullets flying. And, you know, I think they also, it also works in their direction, obviously not to humanity's benefit. We all die and become impoverished, but they can then rebuild the world as they see fit. And your thoughts on Xi Jinping's preparations for war, China, and so forth.
It's becoming inevitable that things are going to go down in China one way or the other. The question is a matter of when, not like if, at this juncture, because the U.S.'s pivot to Asia is just going to put the two countries on a collision course in the near future. And when you study great power politics, it's a tragic story of countries confronting one another and just testing each other's will and eventually stumbling upon an otherwise like preventable conflict had there been more rational minds at the helm to like lower the temperature in these type of heated exchanges. But unfortunately, we don't have that kind of ruling class in the U.S. At the moment, because it's totally governed by neoliberal, neoconservative, fanatic interventionists that want to remake the entire world in the U.S.'s dysfunctional image. So good luck trying to bring about change with that type of people in power.
You know, yeah, every time I feel like maybe they're going to realize that they're spreading themselves too thin or this is going to blow up in their faces, Biden's collapsing. No, they just keep doubling down. You know, I'm reading Ray Dalio's post on LinkedIn today. He's warning of a civil war. Again, these LGBT globalist LGBT flags just posted everywhere. That's like that's a signal. They're doubling down. They're not going anywhere. They're going to go for global domination. They're going to go big or go home, you know?
They're going to be doubling down on the dosage of Biden's like drugs to keep him alive too, as well.
I don't understand them putting him up for re-election. It's just, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like no one would do this in any country. The guy just can't, he's a Weekend at Bernie's.
Elderly abuse.
At this point. And maybe part of it is, I view it as a national shame. I mean, if I were Biden in his situation, I'd be like, myself, I'd say, I'm not running for re-election. There's no way. I mean, I can't. And there's got to be something to this about humiliating America. And I think that I fear there will be some sort of reckoning against the United States. And that sort of leads me to my next question. I was discussing this in Daniel McAdams' home with people we were discussing, you know, what would a collapse in the U.S. look like? Because I was discussing, you know, I was in Texas for the first time, and it's just fascinating where, you know, there is money there. There are people who have good jobs, but I do feel there are others who make decent pay, but the cost of living is high. And so it's a precarious situation as well, that if they have some health issue or lose their job, you could also lose everything. But, you know, in many ways, the infrastructure is pretty good in the U.S. And so I'm kind of, my question I posited was, what would collapse look like in, you know, that part of Texas? Because it seems like it would take a lot. And some people were saying, well, probably what it would look like would be stores would be empty, things wouldn't be delivered. And then I'm extrapolating, you'd see more unemployment, things just becoming very expensive, kind of dystopian-ish. So it wouldn't be like this total zombie collapse, but it would be very, you know, like this dystopian light. And I don't know if you got any thoughts on that continued trend in America.
I think like where I'm at in Austin, it could get really like globalist dystopian, because Austin is the only city really in Texas where its political elites have tried to use all that like Agenda 21 mixed use housing and like pod type of housing. There's already like a major like cost of living ordeal going down in Austin. It's expensive as hell by Texas standards. And there's already rising crime and all of the problems associated with like cities that get like grow like really freaking fast and that have like sketchy political leadership. To add insult to injury, they've got a Soros-funded district attorney as well. So do the math there.
I don't know if you saw that piece from Newsweek. I've bookmarked it. I haven't had time to read the whole thing, but it was a Jewish commentator. Yeah, John. I can't. Well, here it is. It's from Newsweek. Josh Hammer, who's I guess well known And I think he's Jew. Yeah, he says, I'm a Jewish columnist, podcaster. And he says, we are Jews against Soros. And Soros is an evil man, one of the most evil men shaping American and Western politics and global events more generally. I saw, you know, I was commenting yesterday, Soros wrote an article for Project Syndicate saying, talking about polycrisis and if democracy is at risk. And I'm like, or will democracy survive the polycrisis or something? And I'm like, will democracy survive George Soros? And then someone tweets an image of his son, I think Alexander Soros, hanging out with Kamala Harris. And he's just hanging out with everyone. He's like the agent. He's like the New World Order agent is Soros' son. He's literally taking photos of every globalist elite in every nation. It's unbelievable. Someone should compile Soros' son's photo ops with world leaders. I bet you'll find one with every, like with Jacinda Ardern and Trudeau. And I mean, you name it. And now I was just going to mention to what you're saying, Bloomberg put out a piece last week talking about, this Elysium idea of the new feudal Great Reset project where the city states like Austin, let's say, as you mentioned, like it's expensive, the wealthy congregate there, and it's happening more and more where it's becoming like Elysium, where the rich are moving into these walled off elite gated city communities, like let's say Austin, or I'm sure you got gated communities within Austin. Oh yeah. And then more and more the middle and lower class, they're becoming poorer, less work opportunities, and they're being forced to leave places like Austin and the big cities because they can't afford it. And then they're having to go to the outskirts, to the rural areas. I mean, this is very like, you know, feudalist.
Oh yeah. I remember actually come to think about it. One of my good friends, he has family like in Arizona, and Arizona is actually like a really stable state, red state, pretty pro business, pro law and order for the most part, despite the fact it's become more competitive for Democrats lately. But during the whole BLM mania of 2020, his parents just decided to like go away from like their regular house and just go to like a gated community. Many people started doing that in the light of the whole BLM rampage.
Or you just stick a BLM sign on your front yard and they pass over you, like Passover, right? Where you put the painted the top of your door so that the angel of death wouldn't take your firstborn. I guess people just put BLM signs and Antifa exactly. Signs. So they pass over you. They see you're one of us. Or who knows? Maybe they're so crazy, they'll just trash your house. And there's another piece you wrote about Mexican cartels wielding anti-tank rocket launchers. So apparently these, I guess, that were sent to Ukraine have made their way back to Mexico. We had RFK Jr. visit the border recently. I really commend him for that. And he was talking about how it's very dystopian that you got from all nations, people entering the southern U.S. border, like China, Russia, Mexico, all of Latin America, your Middle East, just unvetted. It's nuts. And then, of course, in Mexico, you've got now cartels wielding anti-tank rocket launchers. This is like Fast and Furious, the sequel. You know, I'm worried about the third sequel. What, you know, are they going to have like dirty nuke bombs or you'd be using biological warfare? What's your take on the Mexico, the cartels and this situation?
Well, that's like the problem with like the U.S. having such an overextended empire where it sends weapons to like whatever regime is under its thumb, regardless of how like corrupt or like institutionally unstable they are. They'll just like send these weapons out, and like inevitably these weapons end up in the black market with really nasty entities such as Mexican drug cartels getting their hands on it. You add in a porous border, man. Like there could be seriously a dystopian scenario in the U.S. where like the U.S. like loses, like just breaks down, and you will probably see like Mexican cartels start carving out like statelets in some parts of like the American Southwest. I remember one friend of mine actually joked when we were at a bar that like the Aztlan movement, that Irredentist movement to like recover lands, like American lands that it used to belong to Mexico, is probably going to come in the form of like cartels, like in the future. As outlandish as it may sound, I actually think that's not too crazy to speculate.
I think we might see stuff like that. You know, a very Kurt Russell escape from New York, escape from LA, like dystopian light future. And well, we're out of time. Where do people best find you, Jose?
Yeah, find me on Twitter, Jose Al Nino, at Jose Al Nino, then Substack, Jose Nino Unfiltered, which is josbcf.substack.com. Listen to my podcast, El Nino Speaks, which you can find on Substack, Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher.
All right. Have a great weekend. I'm going to be interviewing Swiss historian Daniela Ganser on my podcast soon. Steve Malzberg is up next.